All right, Audrey, it was last week on Monday, the Safety Act, which we've been talking about for well over a year here on WGN, officially went into action. I don't even know if we have to recap it for people, but Audrey, can you give me a 30-second synopsis of the main crux of the bill and the bail thing?
Right. I think the most important part that people, everyday people, hear about is that the bill no longer has and requires people to post money to get released from jail if they are arrested. Rather, it's either you're in custody without any bail, so no amount of money you can post gets you out, or you're out. That's the crux for most people.
Right. So we are seeing stories already of people being let out on bail who some of us are scratching our heads and wondering, well, that doesn't seem right. But we should pause for a moment, because just because they were let out on bail doesn't mean that they wouldn't have before the act was enacted. I think of examples of the woman who was accused of pepper spraying police, or had pepper spray released from her pepper spray bottle and it got into police eyes, and people were surprised that she was let out on bail. Before the act would have been signed into law, Audrey, there's still a chance she would have been let out. She just would have had to pay cash to get out, right?
Correct. Most likely she would have just perhaps had a lower bond, perhaps some bond amount that she could have posted. Or sometimes, depending on the judge, the circumstances, you could have gotten a recognizance bond, meaning that there was money set on that, but you didn't actually have to post it. So that could have been an option for her before this past Monday.
So I guess what I'm trying to get in at, we've seen a lot of these stories already. I cannot believe this person's let out on bail. This person's let out on bail. And, you know, people have a right to be upset about it, of course. I guess I'm just trying to say, Audrey, that we don't really know how it would have played out before the bill was. It wasn't so cut and dry that the people that are being let out now would not have been let out previous to Monday.
That's correct. That's very true.
Okay. But then that's what makes this complicated, because there's no doubt going to be people who are let out on bail who do commit more crimes. People are going to see that as an opportunity to rail against what happened. And maybe they're right. But the reality is, we'll never know.
Correct. Right. We will never be able to know or know what would have happened.
So you have a lot of friends in this world. You, well, in general, of course, I'm talking about the legal world, and you, even relatives who work in this area too. So what are you hearing, Audrey, from people after the first week?
They knew that this was coming. Obviously, the Supreme Court made its decision and thankfully allowed some time before it was implemented. So everyone had been scrabbling at the end of the year, thinking it would have become effective January 1st, and then the delay and the ruling came down earlier this couple months ago. So it's finally into implementation. I think it's working well. I mean, everyone, all the parties involved, the public defenders, the prosecutors, deputies, judges, probation officers are all doing an excellent job. I think there's still slight confusion with courtrooms and cases that are coming. I think it's just taking so long to do these hearings that bond court, which would have taken maybe 2 hours on a Saturday or Sunday morning, or an hour on a Monday, Tuesday morning, are now taking 7 hours to go through this with the hearing and having probation write up reports. So I think that's what's interesting. And I think it's also interesting, people are actually seeing what individuals are getting released and not being detained, and vice versa. So sometimes it's a head scratcher, because one person who you thought, oh, they're charged with residential burglary, well, they cannot be detained because the prosecutors couldn't support clear and convincing evidence that they were a risk to a specific individual, so they get out. But a person charged with a misdemeanor violation of order protection, the prosecutors were able to prove it. So that misdemeanor, that person's detained, whereas a person charged with a class one felony, they're out. So I think until people get used to that idea, it'll take a while.
Okay, yeah, I want to hype on those two points you just made there. Okay, so the prosecutors are tasked with proving what exactly? Is it a date that this person who, if they are let out, would be a danger to a specific person, or can it be a danger to the community as a whole?
Both. Okay. Both. It could be either one for that to be detained. And I think now what the law requires is, as opposed to before, the prosecutors could just ask orally, verbally, ask the judge to detain these people. Now prosecutors have to file a written petition, have it verified, so that means type it up, get it printed, give it to the judge, the public defender, probation, and court in the morning, as opposed to just verbally asking the judge to detain some person. So that also takes time.
Oh, so they have to write, I mean, like, they literally have to write up the report quickly. That can gum up the works a little bit and perhaps lead to more people getting out, simply because there's not enough time for prosecutors to present their case, both orally and written. Is that what you're driving at?
It just takes more time. So this entire process now takes all day, as opposed to an hour or two in the morning. And probation, they actually have to type up a written report for the judge, the public defender, defense attorney, and the prosecutor in court in the morning. So that takes a lot of time as well.
Proponents, well, there's a lot of things that they argue why this is a good thing. And one thing that they say that, I don't know, makes sense on paper, I don't know if it does in reality, is that this puts a little bit more weight in judges, like the judges are the ultimate arbiters of this. Do you agree, not necessarily with that idea, but do judges now have all the power to determine exactly what's happening here before a trial?
Right. So judges, they do. They're the ones that have to listen to the evidence, and they make the decision whether or not a person should be detained or released. However, even before the Pretrial Fairness Act went into effect, it was still judges who determined the amount of bail to set on a case or not. But now judges are not necessarily, people are not actually being brought before a judge. So if it's certain misdemeanors or felonies, if the person would never be detained, then police officers don't even have to bring a person before a judge. They can just release the person without ever going to a judge. So I think it gives more flexibility for police officers in this case, too.
Wait, can you explain that again? So for certain cases that the police would have arrested someone for something, they would always have to go before a judge. But now, since police know that they're going to be released because they aren't a threat to other people, there's not even an initial hearing with a judge. Did I understand that correctly?
Correct. So nothing in the Pretrial Fairness Act actually requires that the officer brings the person arrested to a judge if they wouldn't qualify for detention. So even if it's a felony and they don't think that they would qualify for detention, the officer now has discretion to just let the person go with just a citation and a future court date.
How did I not know that? Okay, so police can make determinations at the initial, before there's any initial hearing or any thought before a judge. Prosecutors in some of these cases, I will point out that people are upset that the person was let out on bail. Often the prosecutors weren't asking for detention. Are prosecutors changing their methodology here simply because they feel like less people are going to be held in detention, so why even ask? Or was that always the case beforehand, that sometimes prosecutors would not ask for detention and this is just a continuation of that?
Right. I think it's a continuation. Sometimes prosecutors would not ask or would agree to a recognizance or a lower bond. So I don't necessarily see at this point that prosecutors are just saying, you know, it's just taking too long, so we're not even going to ask to detain them. I think prosecutors still are doing their jobs to protect the public and saying it doesn't matter if this hearing, these take all day long. We're still going to ask and argue for the judge for certain cases for these individuals to be detained because they do believe that they pose a risk to the public.
What percentage of people do you think, based on your data or what you've talked to with other people, show up for their court hearing? Do most people show up for their court hearings?
From what I've seen in court all these past 20 plus years, yes, most people do show up for court. I mean, obviously, there's some people that don't, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the people that are detained wouldn't have appeared anyway. It's just hard to gauge because sometimes a lot of people on misdemeanor cases don't show up for court, but those with felony cases do. So it's not as if only people who have serious cases, those are the ones that flee and don't return to court.
In your experience, do you have examples, legitimate, like real examples, you don't have to share them all here, of people who have been detained for, I don't know, weeks and months before a trial for things that aren't all that serious?
Yes, sometimes that happens. A lot of times because they just, before the Pretrial Fairness Act, they just weren't able to post bond. So they're out.
DUI or something like that. And by the way, I'm not saying DUIs are not, they're very serious, of course. But I guess what I'm saying is, things that didn't involve violence towards others, although you could argue maybe DUI is the worst example. I don't know, Audrey. I'm just trying to come, like, what's an example of something that someone sat in prison for months before a trial that, you know, would have been not that much in bail?
Well, it could be some, like a misdemeanor theft, someone stealing from a store, perhaps, or someone that was caught with a small amount of drugs on them, like cocaine residue in a bag, but they weren't impaired at the time. So obviously, people using drugs, it's not healthy for them, it's not safe for society, but that could be considered a nonviolent offense. But unfortunately, they perhaps might be a risk to someone, and so they could have been detained because they didn't have sufficient funds before the change in the Pretrial Fairness Act came into effect.
Okay. All right, Audrey, I'm going to put you on hold here. We do have a comment from the 630 who wants to have, could you please have guests on from both sides of the issue? All county district attorneys except two were opposed to it. I'll have to look up if that's exactly correct. Please voice their opinions. Ask them on the show. They've been on our shows on WGN. I do appreciate the comment. I'll ask Audrey to kind of make their case and what they're saying after the news. And we'll get your answers to the question of the day, too. Go back to Audrey Anderson, Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. All right, Audrey, you get a lot of questions on the text line about the safety bill. You ready to take them?
Yes.
A lot of attorneys, prosecutors, district attorneys, state's attorneys, whatever, which I know you're probably rolling your eyes at because I just, you know, mislabeled everybody, but were opposed to the Safety Act before it went into place. Can you recap why they did not like this idea of people being let out without any bail?
Sure, and the one person was correct. There were numerous, numerous state's attorneys throughout the entire state of Illinois that filed the lawsuit in opposition to it. But there was a variety of reasons. And I guess to boil it down into its simplest is they found, they were arguing that it violates the Constitution, that the legislature changes it, like the Springfield does it, as opposed to a vote by the people in a referendum. Also, it refuses to consider the rights of victims and victims' input in denying or setting the amount of bail, and the victims have by law a victim's bill of rights that allows them to have a voice. So that was something else that prosecutors were arguing. Sometimes also prosecutors were arguing that some cases officers could not arrest people and take them away, but rather had to give them a citation or a ticket for some misdemeanors, including trespassing. And then there was arguments as to perhaps what exactly the standard was for dangerousness for how to prove when a person poses a real and present threat to a specific person or a community.
Yeah, that, and, so that, and that last one is tough, right? As we've already seen with certain cases, it's very hard to determine. Because some people have pointed out on this show and on this station that the bill will actually lead to more people being detained. It will give judges the power to detain someone if they are a threat, as opposed to giving them a bail in which they're able to post and get out. Do you buy into that argument too, Audrey?
Well, I could see how one can make that argument. However, that was one of many factors that a judge considered when the judge was setting bond before this all came into effect. It was whether or not that person posed a threat to a specific person or a group of individuals or the community. So that is something that the judge considered. But now the pretrial factor is codified now more clearly that this is absolutely something that the prosecutors must show in order to have a person detained. And somehow it's hard to actually prove it unless the person, when they're arrested, is going to say, I'm going to come back and do something to person X. How do you say just based upon what they did, they're more likely in the future to do it again? You know, so if someone breaks into a building in the middle of the night with a gun, then a defense attorney, a public defender can argue, well, it's not a threat to a specific person because it was at night when the building was closed. But then the prosecutors could say, well, he had a gun, so he posed a threat. So is that a threat? I guess it depends on the judge that's listening to the argument.
Right. Going back just a second to the idea that more people will end up being detained, I think the argument goes that a judge might view a defendant as someone who maybe could be a risk or at least did something or allegedly did something very serious. But before a judge could at least say, well, I'm going to give you a $100,000 bond, right? Like, I'm serious. And a judge could show that they were serious because it wasn't that or nothing, right? So right now, I guess there's just no middle ground. So the theory goes that judges, to err on the side of caution, will detain more people if there's even a whiff that they might be a danger to people. I guess that is the argument, I think, that proponents of the bill made.
That's very true. And so judges do err on the side of caution, most likely. And then the statute allows that at every subsequent court appearance for that defendant, the defense attorney can just verbally ask that the judge reconsider that the defendant no longer remain detained. And there doesn't need to be any new information. It's just the judge reconsidered, or enough time has passed where the judge thinks perhaps the offender has cooled down, so now you can let them come out. But that's true. So to combat that, at least defense attorneys can consistently ask, whereas before they needed some sort of new evidence to ask the judge to reconsider reducing bail.
Okay. So what you're saying is as of now, a defense attorney can re-argue something and say, hey, look, time has passed. Can we now let this person out? Whereas before it was different.
Correct.
Okay. This is a case out of DuPage County, which we know very well. The reports of a man and five other men were seen walking into the store. Security cameras captured video of a man with a sledgehammer shattering the window of a high-end boutique in Hinsdale. They sold $68,000 worth of merchandise. Police say the man who broke the window cut his finger. He left behind DNA. Police say they matched the DNA to the 30-year-old Terry Johnson, who's now on parole for armed robbery and aggravated battery, and he was released pre-trial. Audrey, does the strength of a prosecutor's case weigh into, or is a judge allowed to take that into consideration in terms of whether to detain someone or not?
No, it's a factor. The prosecutors, when they file their petition, obviously have to have evidence that an offender committed the offense.
Right. There has to be a sense right. that there's at least some evidence to show that this should go to trial, right?
Correct. But the main factor is whether or not that person poses a real and present threat to the safety of persons or the community, and that there's no condition of release that can mitigate that real and present threat. So the strength of the case is one factor, but not the ultimate factor.
Yeah, because, like, obviously one of the arguments made for why the safety bill exists is that you have people who sit in jail awaiting trial, meaning they have not been found guilty, and they are, in our system, innocent until proven guilty. But I can imagine prosecutors saying, look, I know this person hasn't been found guilty, but we've matched their DNA. They're on the security camera doing it. Wink, wink, nod, nod, judge, please side with us here. Or am I overthinking this?
No, that's very true. I recall it's very frustrating for prosecutors when it's 100% clear that the offender committed the offense, but they still are not required to be detained if they don't pose a real and present threat to the person or community. And there's nothing to mitigate, no condition of release that can mitigate that.
Audrey, I know that you've been hearing from people in your industry about this, and they've been talking about it for months and years. Obviously, the process was going to be a little confusing when it was rushed out of the gate. The Supreme Court Illinois decision and the deliberation of that decision at least provided time for people to plan a little bit more for the actual apparatus of how this was going to happen, how these cases were going to go in court. But have you heard from, I know you used to be on the prosecutor side. Have you heard from prosecutors who are upset? Is the reaction more, meh? Like, you don't have to give us any names, but I'm just curious what the scuttlebutt is.
I know people on both sides are upset, but this is the law. So now it's trying to deal with it and figure it out. It's so complex that attorneys, not just in these detention hearings, what used to be called bond court, but in regular court for people that are being picked up on warrants, for those that were charged with offenses before that was committed before Monday, there's these huge complex flowcharts of what if this, then do this. It's very complex. So I think that's now what everyone's focusing on, is to understand the complexities of the Pretrial Fairness Act and how it specifically applies for every unique situation.
That's why I like having you on, because you've been on both sides of this situation as someone working for the state's attorney and now as a defense attorney. Just in the last minute or two we have left, Audrey, is it harder as a defense attorney to mount a viable defense for a client who is in pretrial detention?
It definitely is much harder when a person's detained. Just the logistics of getting there. I mean, courts are great. You can get a court order to bring in your laptop to show the videos, but it's hard when you're sitting there in a tiny room with a defendant, your client, sometimes you have access to them and you can slide them maybe pieces of paper underneath the thin slit. Or sometimes in some jails, you're just in the room with them and you can hand them documents. But you're so restricted to when you can go to jail to prep with them. And it takes a lot more effort to constantly be driving all the way to the jail and setting up the time to meet with them when hopefully that one or two room isn't being used by some other defense attorney to meet with their client who's detained. And a lot of times these police reports, like on murders or something, you have thousands of pages and hundreds or thousands of hours of video that you have to watch. So it's difficult to logistically arrange all that as opposed to someone that's on bond and they can come to your office.
Right. And we should point out, though, that in the example of someone who is detained for murder, they're going to be detained still.
Well, not necessarily. It's not mandatory.
Okay, not mandatory. Well, I guess you're right. I don't know. I guess I always thought that I would say most judges would probably leave them detained, right? Or am I crazy?
No, I presume most judges would probably find some sort of argument or agree that the prosecutors met their burden, that that person poses a real and present threat to a person or community. But on the flip side, a defense attorney is going to say, well, they don't pose a specific threat to that victim anymore.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I know. So there's always two sides. So it just depends on the facts and circumstances of that case and the judge.
Yeah, and I guess that people have been accused of murder and arrested and had a lot of money and got to go out on bail before, right?
True, very true.
And that's the whole point of this, is to not make money the ultimate equation in terms of whether you're in or out before a trial. Boy, this is complex. It gets actually more complex the more we talk about it. We should probably stop, Audrey. I'm just going to scratch my head even more. Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, AndersonAA.com, 630-877-5800. Who do you help? Who should be reaching out to you, Audrey?
Right. We help any adult or juvenile that's being investigated for a crime or charged with a crime, traffic to murder, or those being investigated by DCFS for abuse and or neglect of a child.
All right, Audrey, thanks for breaking this down. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thank you so much for having me on.